Okay, we are now recording. It is September the 22nd, the year 2008. I am Brady Banta, and I am at the home of Mr. Max Render here in Jonesboro, Arkansas, conducting an interview for the Bracero Oral History Project. Now, before we go any farther, Mr. Render, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes, sir.
All right, sir. We'll get started then. Tell me, as a way of some background, a little bit of information about yourself, who you are, where you were born, where you went to school, and just brief capsule summary of what your career has been.
I was born in 1942 at Lake City, Arkansas, 4 miles south at a place called Rush Island, at home by attending physician from the small town of Lake City. My mother and dad, this is a place that's over on the St. Francis River on the west bank, and they had a 32-acre farm, and my dad cleared it by hand, and my mother with help, I guess, some other people, and they grew a small amount of cotton, 12 to 15 acres per year. And we were diversified, and 15-acre rest of it was corn because we thought we had to have raised feed for the animals and the chickens and the hogs, and worked with mules, of course, at that time. And I went to school, started at 48, I guess, at 6 years old at Lake City, Arkansas, and I went there 12 years and graduated from high school. Then my folks moved out on the Cottage Home Road here, where below where the Nestle cereal plant is, and bought 40 acres when the levee, the St. Francis River, was re-levied and put our farm into the river, and we had to come out there and relocate. And I stayed, that was about 18 at that time, and stayed around there on the farm 2 or 3 more years and then went into service. And the second day of January of 64, and stayed in the U.S. Army for 3 years.
All right. At the time that your father employed or used the Bracero, or the Mexican migrant labor, how old were you, and were you on the farm at Lake City or here on Cottage Home Road?
That was the first year we used Bracero labor. It was 1956, and I was 14 years old. And he contracted to take 5. And we fixed up an old house that was on someone else's place and made it livable, had a hand pump, and got all the bunks and the mattresses and blankets that was required, and a two-burner kerosene stove is what they cooked on. And we had that farm at 32 acres on the river where we live, and he had expanded to come out to Lake City there and rented 80 more acres. So we had, I think, around 45 acres of cotton that year, and so that made it more than the family could pick.
Mm-hmm. Now, did the Mexican laborers live adjacent to your home, or did they live on the other land that you had rented?
They lived closer to where we lived, a quarter of a mile basically from us. So when we went out to work, we picked them up, and they rode, we hauled them. And then when they worked at home, a lot of times we didn't pick them up. They walked and was there before we got there to pick them up. You know, they wanted to go early.
Now, when you said you went to work and you had 5, 6 Mexican migrant laborers, you were working with them?
Yes, sir. We'll pick right along beside them, and no incidents or nothing ever happened. They were just as congenial and polite as they could be, and we rode in front of the pickup truck and they rode in the back.
How did you communicate with them?
Well, the first year we had one that could speak quite a bit of English, and then we have had groups that couldn't speak, and you just made sign languages, and if they wanted something, you kind of knew what they wanted, and they didn't want to participate, you just pleaded ignorant.
How did your father come to hire the Mexican migrant labor?
Well, the year or two before, we had had a shortage of local labor. A lot of them had migrated north to work during the Korean War, and it was kind of created a shortage. And he wanted cotton farming. You had to get your cotton out in a timely fashion to get the best price, because if it laid in the field or stayed in the field unharvested, the grade would deteriorate. But it's just imperative to get it out on a timely basis. And he chose to do this so he'd have adequate labor.
Did you use them only for picking, or did you use them for chopping also?
We only used them for picking. Those came like for an eight-week stint. I think you could get them some for 6-week contract or 8-week contract, and I believe those came for 8 week.
Now,
but
go ahead.
Some people did get them to chop with, you know, weeding and hoeing their cotton. And it was a program at one time that they come in here in this area and chop for 6 or 8 weeks, and they'd go to Michigan to a fruit harvest and do some type of fruit harvest work or picking cucumbers for 6 or 8 weeks. Then they would drop back off and pick cotton in this area for another 8 weeks. So those people would be gone, what they would call 3 contracts, before they would go home.
Now, is it your sense, or do you know, that the people that with whom your father contracted to pick cotton for this 8 week period, were these people who were coming directly from Mexico, or had they been someplace else under a contract and were coming here as part of that recontract?
It's what I remember. We never got any recontracts. All of ours came out of Mexico.
All right. Now, was your father doing this independently, or was he part of an association or organization that was arranging the Mexican migrant labor?
There would be a gin, cotton gin, in a vicinity where there'd be a lot of people needing the labor, and they would have one man that would be in charge of taking everybody's application, how many pickers they wanted, and he would do the legwork with the private hauler. And then I think the private haulers wanted to take care of the administrative, getting them on the bus from Mexico.
All right.
Because we were never involved with the Mexican government on getting them on the bus. Someone else, there was a transportation fee to get them here and to get them home. And then I think with this first transportation fee, there was also an administrative charge. We had to pay a little insurance and all that kind of thing to get them here, and then if they got sick, you didn't have to pay a doctor bill. They could see a doctor under this insurance program.
All right. What kind of living arrangements did you have to provide for these individuals?
You had a set amount of things you had to have. Some of the earlier days have had wooden homemade bunks with wooden bottoms, and when we started, we had to have the wooden bunks and the springs assembled under the bottom. But my father just bought government surplus army cots, and we stacked them too high with a surplus army surplus army mattress and
now we're back in business.
The living facilities, you had to have a house up to a certain standard. You had to have a bunk, a mattress, and a blanket per man. And my father used surplus army stuff because he could buy that about as cheap as he could build them. Had to have a cup and a plate and fork and eating utensils. And you had to have at minimum, 2-burner kerosene stove for 5 men, and then a boiling coffee pot instead of the utensils that would require, like for a batching outfit, what we would call it.
How did they? Did you furnish their food? Did they buy their own food?
No, when they came off the bus, everyone usually advanced them $5 on their next first week's pay. They went to the store and bought their first setup of cooking things. Their basic food that they ate were brown pinto beans, flour tortillas, and of course had to have lard and salt to make those. And if we had tomatoes in our garden, my mother gave them to them. She shared with them because mm-hmm. they loved tomatoes and pepper. Now, we did not grow the jalapeno peppers. We grew the red and green chili cayenne peppers. Mm-hmm. And they ate those better than we did. We only just used one or two to season the chow chow, but they could eat them straight down. And then after that, well, then they'd go to the grocery store weekly and buy what they needed. And they did buy eggs. I guess they ate eggs for breakfast some way. And they would mix up peppers and eggs, and they would buy some kind of pork meat and stir all this up. I think they ate that for breakfast. And then they would bring bean tortillas for lunch to the field.
Mm-hmm. You said they would go to the store. Now, did you take them to town?
Yes, sir. You had to furnish transportation.
Now, this was part of the contract.
Yeah.
That, okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you would you take them to town on the same day on a regular basis, once a week, something
usually,
like that?
Usually, unless it rained, and about twice a year we'd go to Jonesboro, which the Big Pablo they called it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was it like? When you took them to town, I'm assuming then, even if you took them into Lake City, that either you or your father or someone would have to stay around to bring them back.
Yes, sir.
What did they do when they went to town?
Well, they stood around, and there'd be so many in Lake City, you couldn't, as old saying, stir them with a stick, because everybody else would have his there also. And you'd give them, you'd say, we're going to leave at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock. You'd set a leaving time, and they'd... Whenever had anyone to got left, they'd always be there.
So how long would you spend in town?
Just like we'd go visiting and buy our groceries, 2 or 3 hours.
And the businesses, I assume, catered to them because of the cash flow here.
Yeah, they liked them. And there was always a rumor that places where they were really thick, that they would raise the price of groceries while they were here. And I cannot verify that, but that's mm-hmm. a rumor.
Okay. And so you made the trip to Lake City once a week.
Once a week.
And you made the trip into Jonesboro
twice
during the season.
Well, when we moved over here on the Cottage Home Road, we carried them to Jonesboro to get our groceries because we were closer to Jonesboro than we were Lake City.
Talk for a minute about when you were still farming in the Lake City area, and you would bring them to Jonesboro. Would they buy things in Jonesboro to take back or to ship back to Mexico?
Yeah, they'd buy clothing, a lot of them. And in later years, I guess they got TV transmission. They would buy every loose used TV nearly they could find. And when the bus would leave, it would just be mounted up on top with used TVs and things like that. And they liked to buy transistor radios in the late 50s when they became more cheaper and more prevalent. In the early 60s, they got relatively inexpensive compared to what they were in the early 50s. Well, I never heard of one until maybe mid-50s.
That sounds about right, yeah.
The transistors and the batteries got cheaper, I guess. Well, I guess they got to make them in Japan. It's what made them cheaper.
Do you remember the amount of the wage or hourly rate that you paid these individuals?
We paid these $2.50 per hundred most of the time.
All right.
And the snapping price, which was pulling, was $1.55 per hundred.
Okay, for the people who may not be familiar with the harvesting of cotton, explain to me the difference between picking and pulling.
Picking is picking it clean, getting all, you leave the burrs on the stalk. pulling it is when it gets scrappy, a smaller amount on the stalk, or it's knotty, you can't pick it. Well, you just snap the burr and all off with your hands, and the gin separates it.
All right. Did it pay the same rate?
No, the snapping was $1.55.
$1.55, and that's something you would
do
toward
it faster.
You could do it faster. Is that something you did toward the end?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Usually.
All right. How much contact did you have with the Bracero labor?
Well, we was around them every day, and occasionally they had radios, and they would, if there was a Hispanic fighter coming on Friday night, they'd get to talking about that. Because back then they had fights on Friday nights, which they don't have anymore. And my dad would ask them, he'd say something to him about it, and he'd ask them into our home, and two or three of them, and they'd watch the Friday night fight if one of their Hispanic people that they were keeping up with, and usually my sisters would pop popcorn, and they'd eat popcorn and watch TV like we did. And they would clean up, and they wouldn't come in their work clothes. They'd be cleaned up and like they were going to town.
Was there any one or small handful of these individuals that became especially valued employees to you?
If he could pick 400 or 500 pounds of cotton, he was more valuable than to pick 200. They were not supposed to be around mechanical operation, like operating a tractor or mechanical equipment, as I remember.
So they were here for a specific task.
Handwork.
Okay. So if could you put them to other types of labor if you didn't have cotton that needed to be picked, like cleaning fence row or something like that?
We gathered corn with ours when we grew 20 acres or so of corn, and and my dad, I remember him saying the price to have it mechanically harvested was $5 an acre, and he did the math. They paid them 50 cents an hour, but they paid them hourly rate on that. And we got ours harvested for about $2.50 or $3 an acre. And plus, he thinks he got more corn harvested because mechanical means wasted some.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked up chunks with them, and if they had new ground.
Okay. Explain to, again, I know what you mean, but explain to a person who isn't from around here what picking up chunk is about.
Well, land that is newly cleared, brought out of the woods, timber production, and brought into row crop production. They cut the trees off, or the most of the trees, and then when you start plowing, as they did in those days, you plowed up chunks and roots that had to be picked up so you could plow it and not drag the crop down and get hung in the cultivators.
All right.
And you took them out to the end or around the stumps and piled them up and burned them.
Did you employ a foreman, or did you have a small enough group that you did the management yourself?
My father did all of it. He was a weigher and paid. And then my sister, the first group we had on Friday night, was a chore. You had to figure out they had books of their daily amount they picked, and you total that on down, and you price per 100, and you tally that up and figure that out. And we figured those up on Friday night, and then we paid on Saturday, and the next Saturday went on next week's pay, and that way it would speed it up, the paying on Saturday.
In paying them, did you pay them cash?
Paid them in cash.
Was that a requirement? Or do you know?
Everybody got paid picking cotton cash.
Okay. So that was just the standard.
Only one or two people in the area that paid by check.
Okay. So that was just standard operating procedure. So it was nothing particular.
No, you went to gin, draw the picking on whatever you'd hauled up there, go to the bank, get the cash, and pay everybody off.
All right. What did these individuals do when they had a day off?
Well, a lot of them washed their clothes, and they're taking their Saturday baths, I guess. And A few of them went to church with us, and some of them would go out walking to other groups and meet and visit with them.
When you said that some of them would go to church with you, what kind of what denomination was
Baptist?
Baptist.
What we were.
How were they received when they went to the church?
Good. Nobody single them out or anything. And the first year we had them in 1956, there was a Hispanic revival in Lake City. Our group, Baptist group, sponsored it. And they had a tent revival and a mixed Hispanic speaker. And there were several people came. And
now, does that operate in the same fashion that you would think of a revival or tent services today, where this would be something that would go on nightly for four or five days?
A week.
Mm-hmm. And
I recall.
So you would take them to provide transportation in Lake City. Mm-hmm. So you would have to, in effect.
We went ourselves because there was an English speaker there that spoke first. And
so that.
We was big on religion.
So everybody shut down work a couple hours early so everybody could get home, get cleaned up, or no?
15, 20 minutes.
15, 20 minutes.
We weren't very religious. We were Christian. That's
what
we wanted to say.
Yeah.
That better work.
There you go. There you go. Okay. Did some of them or all of them have any special privileges?
No, sir. They all. We treat them all just alike.
Okay.
If my dad gave one of them a radio cigarette, he gave them all one.
There you go.
And they smoked Bugler themselves, mostly.
Hand-rolled cigarette.
Hand-roll Bugler. And maybe on the weekend they'd buy ready rolls, they call them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my daddy might smoke Prince Albert. If he wasn't smoking ready rolls, that's a coarser. But they smoked that Bugler.
You said you had contracted for several years.
Well, my dad contracted in 56, so his first year we had five. In 57 and 58 were a reduced cotton program, and there wasn't as a need as great. And in 59, they increased the cotton program, so we got 10 that year, and then I think 12 is the most that he ever got. And that's when we moved over here by Nestle on the Cottage Home Road. And we had a home and then a car garage right out beside it. And we didn't have no place to house our Becerios, so he boxed up, closed at the ends of this garage, and they live in our backyard. And our garden was out there, and we shared the garden with them. And that's the time that they come in to watch the fire tonight, Thatch, more because it was just right there. And they never caused no incident of any kind of a misbehavior.
Mm-hmm.
But now he did not take them to Witt County to buy liquor either.
Did they ask? Okay.
They asked for Cerise occasion or two, and he said he didn't know Sava, he didn't understand that.
Were there any problems that you can remember? Any incidents, trouble?
We had one that wanted to go home once early, and he got these letters, and we take them to a man that had some Spanish in school, and he said the best he could tell, he had some peas that needed picking, but I think he was just mainly homesick.
Mm-hmm.
But he finally went back to work and got over it.
These are all men, no family members with them. All right.
Now, they could be a father or son, but they were above 18. I think that was the minimum age.
Okay. But again, since you worked with this associate through the gin, that was all taken care of before you got...
You knew you was getting so many warm bodies, you didn't know anything about them. And they had a number. Some, I don't know, social security number or a transport number, and you put this down on your pay book, and that's what you went by. And then we give them an individual field number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on.
Other than the pay book that you had to keep up with them daily and weekly,
yeah,
was there any other paperwork that you can remember that your father had to keep up with on these individuals?
No, we kept a log or a weight book all week of what we'd picked and everybody's name, if it's our kind of people, Caucasian, we had their name up there, and the Hispanics, we had their numbers. And they kept their weights on the numbers by the day. And then we transferred them to these log books at the end of the week. My sister helped him with the first group, and she got married and left. So the 59 group, I had to move up and start doing filling the books out.
Did you ever, do you remember any instances where a representative from the Mexican consulate in Memphis came to inspect your living quarters or to monitor the type of work these individuals were doing or to interview them to see if they were unhappy or anything like that?
The only contact that I know of we had before we got them 1 year, someone from the council or someone came and they looked at our house. And he said, I wouldn't mind living here.
All right.
Now you're subject to inspection in the field or your way books, you know, like any government operation, anytime.
All right. Do you remember any instances on your own place or on neighboring places around here where any of these Mexican migrant laborers ran off instead of going back to Mexico?
No, I don't.
All right.
Now they, you know, I wouldn't say if they didn't, but now down in the Truman area, you know, where it was sold liquor, occasionally you hear one of them getting too much to drink and causing disturbance and getting in jail.
But that's
which,
not
that wouldn't
but
be that, any more than a Caucasian.
Yeah, that wouldn't be anything either. out of the ordinary for anybody else.
Right.
I guess this is will call for a subjective answer on your part, but give me your sense, kind of a comparison of the kind of work and the amount of work that the Mexican migrant laborer did compared to the kind of work, quality work, the amount of work that you might have been able to get out of someone that you could have hired locally if there was someone to hire.
Well, the Mexican labor knew he was coming to pick cotton, and he knew how much he was going to make. And he didn't complain about what he made or what he didn't make because he knew he was going to get a set amount. Now, the Caucasian labor, they always came in and started for a set amount, usually picked for 50 cents more, 100. And their first, if they were public laborers, that lived in their own house in town and wasn't tied to your farm, they said, well, over across the river, they're paying $4.00. That was the standard, and that made my daddy angry. And that could have been so, or it could not have been so.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it was in 50 cents per 100 increments more than what they were getting is what they would start. It was a negotiating thing. And if you had a lot of cotton, and the more cotton were, the more you had to pay because there's less laborers. But the Hispanic contract was the same. They didn't go up.
So if you signed at the beginning of the year, if it was $2.50, it was $2.50.
Right.
Okay.
And they knew that. And if occasionally they'd hear that if it went to 3.5, he says, he getting 3.5? Well, and my dad said, well, I got to pay you down there and pay you back. And, you know, you didn't have to furnish your cooking oil or kerosene.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had electricity, they had to furnish, you know, light bulb and lights. You know, it wasn't much. But the first hand, they just had a hand pump, water pump. But then, like I say, the next group we got live in our backyard, and we had an electric pump, and you know, they used that same as we did.
I have heard other people in interviews and in casual conversation talk comparatively, I guess I get in groups about the amount of cotton that the Mexican migrant laborers would pick per day compared to what the local labor would pick.
Well, some of them are extremely good, but we always got these mediocres that could pick from 250 to 400, very few 400 pounders. And myself, my peak, I could pick 300 when I was in high teenage years. And, you know, some white people pick more too than other mm-hmm. people when they work. It depends on how you work at it.
That's true.
And my dad wanted, if he had 10, he wanted to pick, he wanted to get out 2 bales a day, which that was 300 pound average. And we had one or two that could pick 4 and 450, but we never did have one that could pick 500, which I've heard those stories. But most of ours range 250 and up.
When, and you've probably told me this, but I can't remember, when was, to your recollection, what was the last year that your father used the migrant labor?
I think he used them the year I went into service was 64, and after that he teamed up with a neighbor, and the neighbor bought a mechanical cotton picker, and he hired him to pick his cotton, and he worked for him some to kind of like defray the price of the picking, you know. This program, some people didn't like it, and we never could figure out who it was, but I guess the cost of living, they kept raising it so much higher at the cost of getting here that it became economically unfeasible. That's why it was stopped.
So where the escalation was in the cost was in the overhead of getting the laborers here and getting them back
right.
to Mexico.
And mechanical pickers were getting better, and the quality job they did were getting better. Mm-hmm. And so the two met and passed, and this area here and Bay probably used them longer up in here because it was wetter land. And it wasn't as adaptable to mechanical harvest if it had a lot of rain in the fall. But now we're in Lake City in the sand and Manila, it pretty well all went mechanical cotton pickers in the early 60s, but it held on here 4 or 5 years longer.
All right, and that was just a function of the technology
right.
adapting to the
right.
the type of land that's
mm-hmm.
here.
Yeah.
Okay. Would there, I guess, to your knowledge, did the Bracero, did any of the Braceros you had working for you, once arriving here and starting to work, did they complain any about their living conditions or the food or the wages or the contract that they had signed?
No. What the wood contract complained about anybody would contract if you had the cotton was hard to pick and it hurt their fingers. Of course, you know, you just had to pick what you grew, and the farmer had no control of that, but they occasionally would kind of grumble about that. And one year we got some. I don't know why it happened. But their wrists would swell up for 2 or 3 days after they got here, and that'd last for about a week. I don't know if it was strenuous work or not. And finally they got over it.
And these people worked a 5.5-day week? Did they work Sundays? Or
if they would work, if the man wanted them to. We went to church on Sunday. We usually quit between lunch and 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon and cleaned up and went to town and got our supplies, and that's when they did, and we never compelled any to work on Sunday.
All right.
Now, some people work from 24, 7 days a week, and then they went at night to get their supplies.
Do you have any particular, humorous incidents that you can remember that haven't come up in our conversation involving the Mexican laborers while they were here?
Humorous.
Or just are things that you found interesting?
Well, they had this one the first year tried to teach me Spanish, and I couldn't master his technique, and and it took a lot of time, so I got disinterested. He didn't want me speaking slang. He wanted to pronounce exactly. And we learned a few words, and I guess it wouldn't be humorous. The only, like I told you, the only time I'd ever heard of marijuana was one that came out one morning, and he told my dad that said that this one was Milo, which meant he was sick. So he came to the doctor, and I don't know what they did to him, and then about a week later, the man told my dad that said he needed some marijuana. And so my dad told him that he didn't want to be associated with that, didn't want anything to do with it. And so we think that the next week or so, they went somewhere and someone got some in the mail and got him a cigarette or two of it. But he was always kindly disassociated with the rest of the group and kindly wasn't as talkative as the other group. He's kind of isolated, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So he kind of self-isolated.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And my mother told my dad, said if he went to the doctor and if he was on drugs, the doctor probably knew it and just didn't say anything about it. So that was her analysis.
Did you ever here in this vicinity, because again, maybe not just your farm, but when you went to town, did you ever see any instances of animosity or difficulty between the Mexican migrant laborer and the rest of the community?
No, sir. I've heard that mostly taking place where there's a heavy concentration of Negro black people. And because they always said they didn't like one another. Now, I cannot prove that, yes or no.
But there wasn't a great deal of Negro, black,
no.
African-American labor in this area.
We had to do our own work.
Yeah, so, okay. Other than mechanization around here and the associated cost advantages, mm-hmm. or the associated efficiencies, I would say, is there anything else that you can recollect that contributed to the demise of the Bracero program?
Well, like I say, it got cost prohibitive compared to mechanical harvesting, because one got better and they got more expensive and they passed one another, and it became economically imperative just to drop the program.
Okay. Has there been any talk with any different crops that are grown around here now of any need for a renewal of this type of a program? Or is everything so mechanized that you wouldn't need that hand labor?
Everything is mechanized. That it'd be cost prohibitive to use hand labor, even if it's at today's standards.
All right. Well, is there anything else you want to tell me about the program or your perceptions of the program? Because I think I've asked
one thing that we didn't touch on. They came by bus.
Okay.
In 1956, that's when they started coming by bus. Before that, people hauled them. You could haul your own, and if you had a truck that would make the trip to Texas, you could haul your own. And I do not know the details of it, but I do know that some people did that.
But your father did not.
No, he did not.
Okay.
And the gins that had their big trailer seed trucks 2 or 3 weeks before the cotton picking started, they would run those with tarps over them at night, I guess. And then they had 4 rows of seats in them, and they sat just as thick as they could sit in those trucks, and haul them up here. And sometimes they would be sick, and they'd have to be doctored to, before they get well enough to work. And I don't know whether the temperature change or... And then those buses, they were, I guess you might say, heavy-duty school buses. And ever how many seats there were wide, there was one folding seat in the middle that someone sat in that aisle also, which would be prohibitive today. And no seat belts, I'm sure.
Oh, I imagine you're right, yeah. It was a different time, though.
Oh, that, yeah, different.
Yeah. How much, and when we've talked about how the Mexican migrant laborers that your father employed lived, how much different was that from the way you lived?
Oh, well, we eat a variety of foods, and mm-hmm. my mother, you know, fixed, I guess you say, a balanced diet, and they mostly, they're, like I say, their staple was brown beans and tortillas, which was rolled out. They were flour. They weren't meal, I don't think. A flour tortilla, and with water and salt and lard or shortening, I forget what to use. And then they toast. They roll them out real thin. They toast them in a pie plate on a burner.
Mm-hmm.
Then they rolled them up with beans.
Do you have any conception, maybe from your own observations or your dad's conversations about them being here, on a good week, I'll say average week of picking, what would one of these individuals be able to have made, say, in the mid-1950s?
Probably between $35 and $45, depending on how much they made. And
now, how much of that, again, this is probably somewhat supposition on your part, but what is it, your perception, how much of that did they spend on their living here, and how much of it did they squirrel away in one fashion or another to get home or send home?
A lot of them, every Monday morning, they would bring an envelope with money in it, and they want my dad, they'd say, go buy a money order and airmail it to Mexico.
So they wouldn't do that themselves when they were in town?
No, he'd go to the post office and buy the money order and seal up the letter and take them the receipt for the money order. And
Do you have any recollection or memory of you know, if they made $40 in a week?
They'd probably send $20 or either save it up and about 4 weeks send $80.
So they're sending at least half of it home.
Probably, yeah. And another item they liked to buy, I forgot to tell you, was sewing machine, treadle sewing machines, mechanical sewing machines.
Mm-hmm. So they were by choice living frugally here.
Right.
Okay. Well, all right. I don't have any other questions unless, again, you have something else you can remember. We can think a minute.
That's about all I can think of. I seem like I may have told you more than